Welcome to another Noble Heart podcast. These conversations were originally recorded as a live campfire conversation for Basecamp and the Secret Garden, which are membership communities for those who have attended the Noble Heart Retreat. Our desire is that you find hope and clarity through these very honest conversations. For more information about all that the Noble Heart offers, go to nobleheart.com. Hi, everyone. It is so good to be back together again. It's been a long time since we've done one of these campfire conversations. And so not only is it good to do it again, but we are starting this off in a big way, and that's with our very good friend, John Lynch. And you've been getting emails from me about this conversation. John has been on a campfire conversation with us before, and so we're so looking forward to this. And what makes this even more special is that John has just now released another book called On My Worst Day. And John had sent me a manuscript of this, and I was reading this on my iPad, and I couldn't stop reading it because I felt like I was having long deck time with John Lynch, hearing his story, hearing God's intervention in his life and where he was with this and how God was speaking to him and God was guiding him. And so in the midst of this book, you know, I couldn't help but just think about my own life and stop to ask God, where were you during that time in this in my life, and what were you saying to me? What were you seeing? John was stirring that in my heart as I was reading the book. And one of the things that John said to me is we had a little bit of time on my deck this summer, just a beautiful summer night, and we were out enjoying just a great glass of wine and a cigar and catching up with each other's lives. John said, you know, I just really hope that that in my writing I could come across the way I want to when I'm sitting down with a person or speaking to an audience face-to-face. And that night I had actually heard John speak at a church right here in Colorado Springs. And he is the same man as he writes as when you're looking him in the eyes and you're listening to his voice, because he is authentic, sincere, real man. And so, John, we are so glad that you're here with us tonight.
Oh, gosh. I am so honored. There's you two, first of all, Gary and Jeff, and then the people I know who are on the line tonight. These are my heroes. So, man, I got a special cigar for the evening and some special Irish whiskey because, you know, I don't know when this is going to come around again. So, this is a big leap for me. Yeah. After this, I go to a 5-watt station in Gila Bend, so it doesn't go up from here.
So, and Jeff, I just want to say thank you for putting this together with John.
So
let me pass the ball to you and let you get our call started.
Okay, thank you, John. I just want to give you some feedback, something I learned about your book today. And you know, one of the great questions I have for you, and I hope to ask it as the last question, is what did you learn since you've written the book?
Just a minute, I got to interrupt you. You're telling John the first question that you're actually going to ask is the last question. I just want to make sure I understand this, Jeff. Help me out.
Hey, Sam, I don't know if you know in here, but I got the floor.
You're wasting it.
I didn't hear any negotiation on that. He said, Jeff, you're first up here, man, you know? I just want to give you some feedback. Now, I did not order the book because I heard of all the problems. So for the first time ever, I downloaded your book onto my wife's Nook and I read it. And about halfway through it, I started to learn how to take notes, and I could highlight things. And so before the conversation today, I went back over my highlights, and you know what my highlights were was when God was speaking to you. Those were the highlights for me. And I know what a risk it was to do that, but those were the most penetrating points in the book, and I loved it. And so I want to thank you for taking that risk because
thank
I
you.
Stopped – And I've let those same questions run over my heart, too.
Well, thank you. And I feel that's what I'm learning, too. People are saying, I appreciate the awakenings. I appreciate your stories. I appreciate your storytelling. But it's the God voice. It's the way you say the voice of Jesus that has confirmed the way I've heard him and to believe that I wasn't wrong. So that if there's two goals for the book, that was one of them. To get that sense of without the moralistic or without the shame filter, what does Jesus sound like? He's giving me the benefit of the doubt. He's not rubbing it in. He's not beating me to the punch to see I told you so. He's my hero. He's my fan. And so I wanted to, how would that look in those darkest hours? Of what would he say in those hours? And obviously it's unique to everyone and to each of us, but I wanted at least to say, gosh, this is what I imagined he said to me. This is what I imagined my Jesus said to me. So that means a lot to me for you to say that.
I love that. The fact that, you know, Jesus is your hero and you're his fan, you know. We can camp on that all day. And I'm going to get into my first question right now. Here we go, guys. You know, when we work with guys, we work with orientating them to where they are right now, and we use story, desire, and journey. And so what we love about your book is this idea of story. Yeah. And when you ask a normal guy, hey, tell me about your story, so often they begin when they got saved. And for us to begin to introduce the fact that God has been working in their lives ever since they were in the womb, and, you know, that he's been there a long, and it almost comes as a revelation to a lot of people. They just look at all of that chaos and almost want to forget it, and yet God has been developing them all along. And so it was really interesting when you saw that show with Garth. And Garth, you said, was walking us through our own experiences of the last decade. He was helping us interpret our own timeline. And in that, you said God was showing you your future. And I like that. I like that. And in a sense, that's what this book was going back and helping you interpret your own timeline with God this time.
And my hope is that after about 20 pages, they stop seeing me and they start interpreting their own journey and their own story. And that, if I did a good job at all, that's what would happen. And we have a trailer that the people who published this for us, Cross Section, created. And Sam, exactly what you're saying is, all of us, Stalin, all of us, God has been wooing their hearts from the very start. And when he says, Jerusalem, I've wept over you. I've known you forever, and now you're all going to betray me. But that doesn't mean that I have not called your name and loved you and known every single thing about you from the very start. And so I thought it would be fascinating for me, for those 27 years where I didn't know him, to be able to imagine what Jesus was still saying to me, just like a father talks to a baby, even though the baby can't understand anything but sound, you know. I love that you picked that up.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the guys wrote in a question right away. His name is Lehman, and he said, how did you hear the Lord's voice concerning those timelines in your past? What was it? What happened? How did you come about that? What was the interaction like?
Well, obviously at the time I didn't. I would go out into the deserts in those dark, hard times when Arlene Ellis broke up with me and where I was doped up and lost. And I didn't know Jesus. And so now I'm extrapolating from the past and looking back and saying, oh, what did my God have to say to me? What was he thinking at that time? So, by the way, I have a horrible cat who's in my backyard who's whining to me. So if you hear that, it's miserable. He can find me. He knows when I'm on a radio or any kind of a podcast. He finds me. The rest of the day he wants nothing to do with me. I looked at Scripture. And I see Jesus lifting up the head of Peter's mom when she's sick, and I look at him touching the leper when he doesn't have to. And I listen to all the words that he says to anyone but the religious zealot. And they're beautiful and tender and kind. And some of the times he has to call out the ones he loves the most. He has to call out Peter. And I just thought, well, then I want to play that out throughout my entire journey and hopefully get to counter that voice that so many of us think Jesus is speaking, condemning voice, that voice that's saying, see, you did it again, you're a loser, you've always done it this way, and you're always going to do it this way. I want to counter that. And allow us to seep in that and just steep in that for the longest time. And so that was a high goal for this book. This is a real really different kind of book. Because in True Face, Bill Bruce and I have always written together and written, you know, largely didactic books. I mean, Bose was an exception, but
yeah.
We're trying to teach these principles of what does it look like to live out of our identity. But I begged them for years, guys, one of us has to actually personalize this and say, what does it look like when it all falls apart, when it all fails for one of us? And finally they said, guys, John, go do it. And so I was in a really, as you read, I was in a really horribly dark place. I didn't want to be. I wanted to be in a really strong, together place when I wrote this, and I wasn't. So really there was a first iteration of it that Bill and Bruce had to say to me, John, this is too dark. This is part of you, but it's not all of you. And so I had to start over again. It was really embarrassing. Okay. I had to start over again on it because I was in such a dark place that's been a beautiful. I'm really the book that you're reading. I wrote in 3 months. You know, the book that you're not reading, I wrote in a year and a half.
Wow! Wow! That's so fascinating. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and John, what I love in this illustration of writing a book is that you had some friends to say, John, life may feel like this, but you're more than this.
That's
you know,
right,
now,
Jerry.
Now, this was around a book project, but, you know, I know, you know, Jeff, Sam, some others have done that to me at certain points to say, I know your life feels like this, but let me tell you about the glorious side of your life, the real life there, not just the battles you've gone through. And
that's right.
And so I just think that alone is such an important idea that friends do that for each other, let alone for a book like this.
Absolutely. And even at the end of this book, Bruce and my wife and Bill, they each said, you're not talking about I made the statement in the book, it's not just about what God says about me on my worst day, but what he does through me on my worst day. And they're saying, you're not seeing what we see. We see this transformed, beautiful, mighty man who's coming out of this horrible season, and you're not writing that. And you have to. So they came in and helped me edit the last 30 pages of the book that now hopefully reflects that.
So, John, I mean, you're raising a great point. Why pick a title, On My Worst Day? I mean, that is not the classic Christian leader. Christian leader saying, on my best day, let me show you how I get up at 4 in the morning and pray. So you choose the topic, On My Worst Day, and why do you do that?
Thanks. Well, first of all, facade of my best day is not true for any of us. We're all hurting. We're all confused. I used to think that. I used to think that there was a Levitical priesthood of really together people who had most all great days, and they were on their game, and they didn't suffer from the same maladies that the rest of us did. And it's crap. It's not true. It's not true of any leader anywhere. And so one of my bylines has always been, I'm Christ and John Lynch on my worst day. And so when it came time to pick this title, an old buddy of mine, we went up to Prescott and I said, talk to me. How do I even think about this book? His name is Bob Ryan and he has written plays with me. He's a songwriter. He's everything I do, he does better. And he says, well, I don't know anything else, but I know the title has to be On My Worst Day. And if this is true, if Jesus is who he says he is, and if grace is true, and if we can live out of this identity, then the truth is I can tell you about my very worst crap and have some people in my life who can know the worst of me and discover that they'll love me more in the telling of it. And I, so I wanted to model that. I wanted to go under the bus and say, okay, is that true? Will you guys look at me as, oh, well, Lynch has proven again that he's screwed up and, you know, don't buy this book. The guy's a loser, you know. Or would we identify with it and say, finally, a leader who is telling the truth about his real stuff. I've always said, to the degree that a preacher tells about his stuff from the pulpit, the culture of that climate of that faith community will reflect it. So if all I ever do is, well, I struggle in traffic, sometimes I think bad thoughts, you know, then that's the level of the audience that, well, that's what it's safe, obviously, to disclose. But if I can disclose that horrible scene that I play out when Amy has failed and I'm laying in bed and all my demons are out, well, then that becomes the currency of the community. And so that's what I long to do in the book, too.
And so, John, why is it, I mean, so I agree with you. Why is it that in some ways we get more built up and our faith actually is increased when we hear a leader's struggles and they're just
Absolutely.
Being genuine than
Absolutely.
When they just talk about their triumphs? What is it that stirs in us? Why do we all get more inspired,
Well, not everybody believes that, first of all. Most of us want a pope. We want a clergy who's bigger than life. We want to believe that there's such a person that exists, and there is no such person. And the beauty is, when we finally experience brokenness, our soul, this new nature within us, trusts those who will say the same. It's not like I want to tell you when I'm having a great day. I want to tell
right.
you about my best days. I want to tell you about my triumphs. I don't want to have this opposite thing where I can never tell you that things mm-hmm. are really on a roll right now, that God is just, my life is, I want to tell you those things too. It is inescapable. I really think the first 15 years of ministry, I felt like I was stealing money. It was so easy and fun. And then you read that one chapter where it all fell apart, and I felt mm-hmm. like there's not enough money to do this in the world. You know, I need a Learjet if I'm going to have to do this. And we need to hear that, because otherwise I feel like, is it just me? Am I the only one who's suffering? Am I the only one who feels like they don't get it, who feels like they can't keep their cheese on their cracker, as Brennan Manning says? And when we find each other and tell each other and we give courage to each other, it makes us trust Christ more. We go, so this is the gospel, and you're not out there mocking me and saying you're the only one who doesn't get it. That's a beautiful gift when we get to do it with each other. And obviously we can't do it with everyone. Not everyone can handle all of the worst of us.
Sure.
So I find that smaller
right.
community of those who I gradually, slowly learn to trust that they can protect me and that they will actually love me more. You know, that old saying that we did in Bo's Cafe, what if there was a place so safe where the very worst of me could be known and I would discover that I would be loved more, not less, in the telling of it? Deep calls to deep when that happens. Men become men when they get to do that, when they get to express that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Hey, John, if my colleague from Colorado Springs will yield me one more question here. I just want to jump in with this question. And I want to say this. I really enjoy actually reading a lot of your stuff on Facebook. And one of the things I love about it is how you love people and how you find these amazingly creative ways to affirm them. And you're, you know, you kind of live out this, you love with abandon. And so I just want to go to this one point in Bruce Colburn's song that you posted, you know. And guys, listen,
here he is writing a book that he's smoking cigars, drinking scotch, and he's going to Las Vegas for a vacation, and he loves Bruce Goldberg, you know. And I wonder what the Judaizers are like out there, or do they just don't even bother with you anymore? You know, I don't know.
I think I blew a lot of currency on that, but they didn't like me to start with, so it didn't take much. Yeah,
didn't take much. Okay, so my question, right at the end of Bruce Coburn's song, he says that I'm never going to let my love get locked up again.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying about the Facebook and how you love people is you live that way, you know. And
thank you.
So my question to you is what has locked up your love in the past?
And what
locks up your love now?
Well, by the way, those are, that gets to the heart of everything. First of all, you're talking about Bruce Coburn, who, if I could have dinner with any two people, one of them is Koufax and the other is Coburn. Coburn, I don't know a songwriter who captures the words about Christ like he does. I just, and most of his songs aren't about Christ, but when he does, he's amazing to me. And my love, I would say, got locked up from my wife and children when I was kingdom building. And I wanted to be great. I wanted so much to have my gifts and talents make something great in this lifetime and make my church great and make me famous. And my wife and my kids paid for that, dearly paid for that. And I'm getting to an age in my life where I've failed at so many things and hurt enough people to where I God said, John, is that really what you wanted? Is that really what you wanted? Or did you want influence? And I went, I do. I want influence. And I found my wife again. These last 2 years in the middle of this pain and this crap that I've gone through, I found my wife again. And I think we're having the best years of our entire marriage.
Wow.
And I'm finding my kids again. And you know what's interesting? I'm getting to go around and apologize and own the pain that I did to others along the way. And it's been a beautiful season. It is. So when I get on Facebook, I think my goal all along with Facebook is I wanted to model this environment of grace that we talked about. So I love birthdays for friends. I love to get to laud my friends. Like today I got to laud John Boring, this 82-year-old friend who he just came to Christ 6 years ago. And he came to Christ one Sunday when I was speaking. And so it's like we've had this unbelievable relationship together where so I love doing that, and I love others getting to watch that and dare to believe that we can create those kind of environments. So for you to notice that, for you to see that, I love humor. I love wild, playful, free association humor because I think that teaches the gospel too. And that and affirmation, that's about all I know how to do. That's about all I got. Those are my only, you know, arrows in my quiver, so.
Okay, so many things have happened to me while reading this book, but that's one question that I've taken to God, and we've had some nice conversations about what has locked up my love and what will lock up my love even now.
Yes.
And it was beautiful, but that'll cost you a cigar in order for me to tell you the results of that. And
oh man, so, I can't wait.
Right now, Gary. I know you've got a question there, so go ahead, Gary.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so now I have an additional question now that you just said what you'd said, John. So tell me just so we understand, we have a picture of this, like you've done so well painting pictures in your book. What did those kingdom building years look like? What did you look like in those years versus what you look like now?
Oh, oh. Well, last night, it was interesting. On the same patio, I had a friend, Tim Moreri. He came over, and he said to me last night, John, for many years, all of us, let me say it this way, I would not let people critique me or criticize me. I would become emotionally subjective and make them pay for critiquing or criticizing. I just couldn't hear it, for it might mean that, I think when I first came to Christ, I just said, God, look, you've given me this gift, and people seem to be liking it, so let's make this deal. I came to Christ late, so let's not work on any issue that I have, and just let me use my talents, and we'll do great things together. And so any threat to that got in the way of my kingdom building. And so it was like, please, no, don't critique me, don't criticize me. And so in those days, I think I was a lot of work for my best friends because they loved me so much, but I didn't let them love me. So here I am trying so hard, and I don't know how to do any of these things that I'm trying to give direction to, and they want a way in, but I can't let them in because I'm too afraid that it'll prove that I'm not enough. So that kingdom building of wanting to be great, wanting to be adored, wanting to be somebody special, it robbed people. I know that they loved me, and I know that they were there, and they wanted to be there, but I had to shut them out. I had to not allow them to love me with their strengths and their talents. So I regret that unbelievably. That's if I have a regret in my life, I wish I could have a do-over for about 20 years there. Mm-hmm. I've learned it a little bit late. I'm 60 years old now, and I feel like I'm letting people in to speak into my weaknesses. Only now.
Was there a part in your story, I don't mean necessarily a moment, I'm sure it was moments or a season, but was there a part of your story that all changed? Was there something you went through? How did you realize that and then want to walk away from that?
Yeah. I hate to say this. Obviously, this is not new with me, but we either learn things by faith or by experience. And pain is a great experience teacher. And so when I thought I was losing my life, when I thought, wait, I'm going down, I don't have anything anymore that I can do except lay on the couch next to my wife and watch TV tonight. That's all I got. I would go to do conferences, and some of you were at those conferences where I was bluffing. I was hurting so bad and shuddering and just having a hard time getting my words out that I thought, okay, God, this dream is over. And now you're objective. Now you go, well, I got nothing to bluff about. I got nothing to pretend. I got no end game. I just have you and me, Jesus, and the people around me who love me. Well, now I can hear differently. So I really think Amy's failure that caused me to overown and carry that and be embarrassed or all that stuff, and then this physical myelin sheath degeneration that has left me just with raw nerves that are acting out, it really took some dreams away, but at the same time it took that ambition away of trying to prove that I was somebody more than I was, or trying to prove that I was enough. It was still that age-old thing of assuaging shame, of trying somehow to prove that I wasn't as bad as I was convinced that I was.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So this season with the pain of the last several years, I really think it has been, it has caused me to finally start to actually try on a lot of the truths that I've been teaching all along and knew were true all along, but probably had not experienced the way I'm getting to experience them right now.
Okay, John, I just want to read a section of your book pertaining right to what you're talking about right now, because you let the Lord speak right into your stuttering, your pain, what happened with your daughter. And God speaks to you and says, don't be afraid. You are not vanishing. You are not losing your mind. You are not losing your life. You are gaining it. I'm holding you together. This is what love ultimately longs to do, to be allowed to hold another together on this earth. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah. I read that to my niece yesterday in my kitchen. She's in a time where physically she's hurting a lot, and she just loves to be in the inner city with the poor, and she can't do anything right now. And she felt like, is it over for me? Am I just going to be this person who can't contribute? And so I read that to her, and she started sobbing and sobbing. And I really do think that I come to grips with that a God who adores me more than I can, he cares more about my life on this earth than I do, is saying, I'm not going to let you fade away. I'm not.
Yeah.
You're not going away. This is your moment, kid. And I've got this thing. And how can that be? How can that be that, wait, I thought it was my capacity that was going to lead the way. And he says, oh, no, kid, it's your person. I'm developing that in a magnificent way right now. So that's something I never wanted to have to learn. And I've been learning it.
John, let me ask you, as you went through your story, and I find it remarkable the detail at which you remembered your story. And but I know you're a man who can remember the smell in the room, the light, and everything else. As we were talking, on my deck. But how did you come up writing down what you sensed the Lord was saying to you, his thoughts towards you in each of those times?
Yeah. Well, when I first came to know him, within 6 months, I felt like I'd let him down. And I started to create this voice that Jesus, this dissatisfied Jesus, this, yes, I love you, but boy, you've been dissatisfying to me, and you let me down, and you're not enough, and come on, come on. And I used to write these journals filled with self-loathing, hoping to beat God to the punch.
Yeah.
And over time, being in an environment of grace, being nurtured by people more mature than myself who taught me, John, that's not Christ's voice. And to be able to dare to risk to take that moralistic and that shame filter off of Christ's voice, I started believing, you know, the one who says, to the exact extent that my Father loves me, so also I love you. I mean, how do you water that down? How do you modify that? You know, you can't. How do you modify, therefore now there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus? None. Not yours, not ever from me, not from anyone else. I won't accept it. I'm crazy about you on your worst day.
And I started
to believe it. And so now all I'm doing is extrapolating that voice into my situation. What would that God who loves me to the exact extent that his Father loves him, what would he say when my shame is ruling, when I get myself into incredible trouble, when I get deeply hurt by a college baseball coach, when Arlene goes away? I know what he would say to me. I know what my Jesus would say to me now, because it's consistent with those verses that can't be modified. There's no way you can say, well, what about this verse? No, once he said that about how his Father loves him and how he loves us, we're stuck with that. That allows me to take the risk of believing how Jesus speaks to my heart and who he is towards me. And I've actually have to say, my golly, I've come to believe it. I've come to actually believe it, that never is he the condemning judge or the mocker, or that he's playing me, or he's getting even with me, or any of that. And I have to say, it's taken a long time, but I actually believe it now. So all I'm doing now is taking each story and going, what would he say? What would the God who loves me like that say? What would the perfect lover say in that moment without trying to give me a pass, without trying to be the doddering old grandfather? What would he say to me? And so that was my goal in each of that, so that all of us could say, oh my gosh, that's true. That's true. Oh, I've assigned him the wrong voice for so long.
Yeah. So, John, I love what Gary said about your book. He said when he was reading your story, God began to speak to him about his story.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you that this book is a deeply personal book for me. I did the exact same thing. It's not your story to me. God is speaking to me about my story. And I just want to read this one part because I wonder if the guys listening have heard some of these things. But it's the scene where you're at the church and they're all set up with a bar scene, but you're going to have to do a Sunday morning. And you're trying to work it out. And then you come to this realization, and in it you say, from this day on, I am never again waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
The sense that I don't belong, that that who I am won't fit in any church. It goes away.
Yeah.
In that moment, I know when I fail, I won't be asked to leave. I know I will not have to eventually run. And that was a deeply personal piece right there for me because...
Chip, how so?
Okay, because here's what God said. He said, you know what you believe about yourself? That in the end, it's not going to go well for you. This is not going to end well for you.
Yeah,
and I'm living under that. I live under that, and so I go back to God and I say, "Well, I'm sorry, but that's my experience. You know, it doesn't end well for me." Yeah, and so the conversation started, and I think you would say,
so
"Well,
good.
Why do you write
that's
a story
so
about your past? Why do you write a story about your past?" Well, if you're wounded in certain places, then that wound will speak to you. Right now, it will speak to you, and I think what you're trying to do is bring God's voice back into that situation and let the truth be spoken.
So exactly right. That's so well said.
I think a lot of us
creative ones, we feel like, oh gosh, eventually I'm going to get squelched. Eventually I'm going to get redlined. This doesn't go well for people like us. It would be best if I just was an usher, you know. And a lot of us leave the church because it got played out. It really was true. But there are more and more communities, and sometimes we're having to be the first person on the beach to create them, where it is safe and where it does not end poorly, where we get celebrated, where, you know, you saw that chapter of my 50th birthday where I went, are you kidding me? How did this happen? How can the real John Lynch, the unfeigned John Lynch. John Lynch, with all of his weaknesses, with all of his idiosyncrasies, not hiding anything, how can he be welcomed in a faith community? And to find out, oh my gosh, I've not only been welcomed, I've been asked to represent and stand in the middle of the room. And when people find that, when non-believers go, you're kidding me, that could happen? Such a place can happen. It draws them, and it draws the fragile and weak and scared, and it draws the competent and strong and sufficient, and they go, the real me, the one who's not trying to be the religious me, but the real John Lynch in all of his immaturity and all of his irreverence, all of his playfulness, all of his whatever is welcomed. Oh, gosh. Mm. And Jeff, I mean, that's got to be true for you because you are the king of such a community. You live in dream. You live in wild abandon. You live in the truly a wild life in Christ. And you just go, will that ever be accepted? And I know a lot of the guys who are on the line right now, I know that to be true about them. And I just want to say, hold out. Don't give in to that lie. That anything that has more institution than three people will let you down always. It won't. I stumbled in like a blind pig gets an acorn. I stumbled into one of them, and now I get to protect one of them.
Mm. Well, you have no idea what that means to me to hear that. And where I am right now with God on that subject is I push back on him going, well, that's my experience. But the conversation now is I'm telling him I don't want to live that way. I don't want to live that way, thinking that the worst is that the shoe's going to drop and it's not going to end well for me. I don't want to live that way.
And, my friend, you will be marked by that. You are marked by having said that now. And I got marked by having said that. And it means you stay in the arena and you still will get hurt. It does not mean you won't get hurt. But I can't believe it. I can't believe it. John Lynch fit somewhere. Oh, my gosh. How did John Lynch, this rebel who traveled from town to town to town to town to town in his old Volkswagen until it got too complicated and too weird and too strange, how could it be that I've been in the same house now for 30 years, in the same church for 30 years, and grown up with the same people, and it was okay? In fact, it's been beautiful. And sometimes you have to start over again and find that community at 52. Jeff, what you have done is going to be a roadmap for a lot of people, my friend.
Mm. Yeah, because I don't want to not offer. There's just too much there not to offer this, you know?
That's right.
And I just don't want to believe that. And, I've found the community that you're talking about, and that's another conversation.
I've got lots of cigars, my friend. I've got many cigars, but none of them as good as the ones that you serve. So I don't know. I don't know. I bring nothing to the table.
So,
Gary, Dan, you guys go, man.
Yeah, you know what? I'd love to hear now for John to answer the question you asked in the beginning for the end. And I believe your question was, wasn't it, Jeff, is now that you've written the book, what has life been like now, or what are you working on now? Is that it?
Yeah. What have you learned since writing the book about? Mm. Sometimes you write the book and you have no idea how it impacts people.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Well, what are the revelations, and what have you learned? What has God said since you've written the book?
Well, if you know me well at all, you know that I struggle with insecurity, and you know that I thought, my gosh, I even had this Fundly project where people gave money for me to write the book. It's not like I had a publisher's advance. These were friends who said, John, we think you can write this great book, and I'm going, halfway through I thought, how do we find all these people and give them their money back? You know? The thought to be able to finish the book and to find people come out of the woodwork and say, okay, that's my story. That's my story. And I knew I wasn't a great writer. I'm a much better communicator in front of an audience than I am a writer. But I knew I could tell my story if I could just get myself in a place to tell my story. And so it has been, I feel like, okay, take me now, Lord, because I got to write that legacy for my grandchildren. You know, one day, Macy, who that story in the book is about, she will read that about her grandfather and know his faith and know what he believed and know what his values were. So I'm at such incredible peace. I want it to sell a lot so that I get to go out on the road and hang out with Vern. You know, but if it doesn't, I know that it's finding people and giving them freedom to believe the voice of Christ and to hear his voice in their stories. And, guys, I just can't tell you what a content feeling that has been for me. So I think one of the things I've learned is here's Jesus saying, I don't want to say this to you, but I did tell you that this is going to be your great moment of redemption. And what your wife said to you at the Garth Brooks concert, I really did mean that, you know.
That was good.
So even if it means I'm only speaking at a 5-watt station at Gila Bend, it doesn't It doesn't get any better.
I've been to Gila Bend, man. And that's a great analogy, man.
Oh, gosh. If anybody's ever been through Gila Bend, you know I just said the best analogy there is.
it could get to 172 degrees in Gila Bend. Mm-hmm. It's possible, you know.
And there is the Space Age Lodge there that was really hip about 50 years ago.
I flew a charter down there, and I'm sitting at the airport with an old-timer, and it was my first time in Arizona, and I said, hey, have you guys ever seen a scorpion before? And he goes, a scorpion? Stand up. And he kicked my chair over, and sure enough, there were two under the chair.
Yeah.
And that was the end of it, man. I crawled back in the airplane. I wouldn't get out, you know, until, you know, what an amazing place that was.
I live in a place that has what I hate the most. I have the greatest fear of snakes of all mankind, and I want to live in Ireland. You know, there's no snakes there. You know, I don't know what happened. I shot a gopher with Ricky Valdez. I always say this in fifth grade. His dad had a pellet gun, and he said, would you kids just watch for the gopher to come out? I'd never shot a gun ever, and I killed the gopher. And I really believe God said, I love you. I have a wonderful plan for your life, but I'm going to send you to a barren, dry land with glare, and you'll have to live there the rest of your life.
Hey, you know, I love this one piece right there, and it just encapsulates, I think, what you're trying to do. And it says, we've been trying to figure out how to help others discover the magical freedom of the original good news.
Yeah, yeah.
What was, for moments, the only Christian voice on the market has now fallen apart upon hard times and is no longer the majority voice in the body of Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when I look at how our country's turning out and everything, I wonder if I'm leaving this place better than when I got it, as when I was born here. But I can say, I think this is where we've moved the ball downfield. I think we're opening up the fact that possibly, just on the outside chance, God might be way better than we could have ever imagined. And that he's absolutely in love with us, you know?
Amen.
And I love people who come along with God's voice like that speaking to us.
Well, thank you. The original good news, I really believe, got covered pretty early on. And now, I don't know if I'm the only one who feels that way, but I see more and more signs of Aslan walking amongst us now. We're in a different day, you guys. And we're alive for it. And no longer is the original good news being covered up anymore. And I think 30 years ago, who carried this message? I mean, a handful of people. And now we're finding each other all over the world. And we are going to leave this place freer, more alive, more true, more delightfully being loved by Christ. My kids have bought in. It's all they've got. And that's our incredible destiny to get to do. And it's happening in our lifetime. I really believe it. I don't have this defeatist picture. I have this unbelievable undercurrent sense that it's happening all over. You guys have been doing it for a long, beautiful time. And it's happening, you guys. The original good news is starting to get its place in the market again.
Well, again, John, thank you. Jeff, thank you for putting this together. Sam, thanks
for... Okay, guys.
Try hosting this, and we will do this again, John. I'll be
great.
Back at your door again, so thank you. I hope that these podcasts have been helpful and encouraging. To find more of what the Noble Heart offers, go to thenobleheart.com.